So basically, you can't believe you, everything you, you hear about in the paper, and every single person has such unique experiences. You and I could be at the same place at the same time, and our perceptions will be entirely different. I may like it, you may hate it. There's just not a lot of horror things that I saw in my 22 years anyway. You know, isolated instances, kind of what I felt about it, and you found somebody you didn't like their management, didn't like their leadership, disagreed with their theories. And in a year or two, one or the other of you is going to be gone, so roll with it. So some of it is perceptual, it's how you deal with it, the same as, you know, a lot of the sexual harassment type things. You know, people say, after you've been in the Army 22 years and claim you've never been sexually harassed, well, people treat you the way you act, for number one. If you're going to get down there and cuss and smoke and joke like the troops, well, they're going to do it right back. If you conduct yourself like the lady and maintain some professional status, that's how you're treated. And that's kind of how I found it. And when I didn't like something, I would leave. So why stay there and be subjected to it? And if they weren't my company, they would suck. And so I never had any kind of trouble like that. So either the discipline, the horror stories, or the sexual harassment, you know, even the stories with, you heard it, like I said at the beginning, with my folks concerned about lesbianism and stuff, you've got the same proportion of numbers of people like that in the military community as you have in the civilian community. Unfortunately, people focus on the uniform and zeroing and saying, oh, the military has them. Well, look at your college campuses, look at your towns, look at your universities, you've got the same thing everywhere. People seem to accept it more out there than the military, though.
Were there any different roles, like for females, than there were for males? Were there any like, big differences?
Well, again, that's changed over the years. Initially, even with smoking, and I didn't smoke when I first went in the Army, but you heard about it all the time, so women were not allowed to be walking down the street with a cigarette. They had to be sitting at a desk or sitting at a place in order to have a cigarette. Or a guy, of course, could walk down the street with a cigarette all day long. So that was clearly one big difference. There was always the rules for both males and females for hairstyle and pant lengths and skirt lengths too, and then so those, you know, both male and female smokers had those kind of rules. The biggest one was the smoking. It tickled me anyway. It didn't matter because I didn't smoke at the time, but that seemed pretty significant. But you had to be sitting down, you know, at your desk or at a seat before you could smoke. Not just on the grass now. You could be sitting on something before you could smoke.
When the Army actually became co-ed, so to speak, were there a lot of problems with the men and women, like the men not wanting to be with the women or whatever?
I don't think there was going to. That really happened in, 78, and I didn't even go into the real Army until a couple of years after that. And I think the women coming in accepted a lot more than I did. And I kind of had to shut them. I kind of felt like the Army lied to me. They told me I could be a lady. They gave me a dress. They gave me heels. They told me I could do my hair. You know, they could wear makeup. And all of a sudden, poof, they want me to wear men's clothes. And they're trying to turn me into a man. It's like, you know, they really lied to me all those years ago. So there were a lot of changes at that time. Of course, I just, even though I read them in the rags and I heard about them and we had training fields on them, I just don't think I realized the real impact until I went to the assignment in Panama and saw the tremendous difference that there was then. I don't think there was so much any more animosity between the guys and girls. By that time, a lot of the job openings had paralleled out a lot. The acceptance of women, of course, initially we were Catholic at 3%, then it went to 5%, then it was 7 or 8%. So the number of women in the military increased, and as the number increased, and as their ability was proven, and the fact that they could do the job and didn't require a lot of exceptions in that helped some of the disparities and inequities go away, actually. We were competing in the same system for promotions at that time, vying for the same assignments. Although there were still things we couldn't get, and every so often you hear guys say, yeah, you could spend all this time in the Army, you didn't get to have to worry about going to Vietnam. Well, that's true, we didn't. We couldn't get there. There was a waiting list as long as your Army. You couldn't re-enlist for Vietnam at that time. And the only ones who could go at all, when they were able to get on this list that wasn't longer than your Army, was basically medical people. And those were the only ones. So it wasn't that we had to worry about it. We couldn't get there if we wanted to get there. Yeah, so some things like that, but for the most part, women proved that they could pull their own weight, and they were more appreciated. The numbers were bigger, were increasing in rank. Since more of us were staying in, well, most of the wars could stay in because we didn't have to get out just because you got married or had children. So we didn't lose as many to the attrition process. Basic training parallels some, but there's always going to be differences in male and female training just because we are built different.
Before, like, all the changes have been made, about how long was a career for a woman in the Army?
It's pretty darn short. Bigger. A woman enlisted at 18, she couldn't be 17, even with parents' consent. She had to be 18, so that was a difference back then. There was a time when you're starting to grow up, starting to fall in love, just when you want to start your family. And if you couldn't continue your career when you pursued your normal social goals, the attrition was terrible. That's one reason why, even after the percentage of women who could be in the military went higher, than I don't recall the highest number that it was, but so they could have, say, 20,000 women in now, and the cry at the higher levels of the feminine groups were, you know, but you only have 120 EAs. Well, not for nothing, it takes a couple of years to become an EA. You can't just turn someone into an EA overnight. And the people, you know, had to go through that cycle, so the people there were, period there were, just didn't balance out. You had the majority of your female troops were lower rank, but as time went by, time was the only thing to cure that. You couldn't just, you know, fast speed forward the promotions. In all reality, it just wouldn't work. So it took a while to balance out, but it's certainly much more balanced out now than it was 5-10 years ago, even since more women could see it. So probably between 1 and 3 years, if that much, was the average state of the majority. You figure with such a small part of the force to start with, and as soon as you wanted to have a life of your own, you were kicked out. You can understand why it took us a little bit while to grow and a little bit of while to get rank and get in positions of influence to where we could make changes that we felt we wanted to make. We've come a long way, Ellie. Just in the time, and probably if you had told me 20 years ago the Army, Women's Army Corps would have been what it is today, I probably never would have believed. You say, no, why? That'll never happen. Any changes in our society take decades, and that's literally what's been.
After your time, it was time to retire. Was it hard to get out? Like, after you got out, did you miss it and want to go back?
I'll be real honest with you, Kelly. I miss the camaraderie. There's just a certain tightness that people in the military experience. Transitioning to civilian life, yeah, it's really difficult. And I'll tell you what the most difficult part is. It's like, when you're in the military, I mean, you wear a uniform and somebody knows all about you. They know how long you've been in. They know a lot about the jobs that you've done, places you've been. Your uniform tells the whole story. It tells everything about you. And all of a sudden, you take off your uniform, you lose your identity, you lose your rank, you lose your status, you lose your position. I mean, you are just a non-entity. One of the things that we teased about at Fort McClellan when I was stopping there after I retired was even an enlistee has more status than we retirees. At least they know who they are. They're a private. Retirees start losing benefits. You're only accommodated in the medical arenas if they have space for you. You're on a separate waiting list for a MAC flight, the military available flight. So you just lose a whole lot of space. You lose a lot of benefits. Even your retired pay, when they talk about 50 or 75% of your pay, you don't always realize how much of your pay is not even included in your taxable base pay. So when you start thinking that you're going to retire at 50% of your income and you get your first retirement check, it's like, this is not 50% of my pay. You know, maybe 35 or 40% of my pay. Because you realize that you have all that. Trying to get government jobs, trying to get anything. You've had all these years of experience, a whole wealth of experience, a lot to offer, and you're not old. I mean, all things considered, you're not old. You have a lot to contribute, and yet people will still want to start you at minimum wage entry-level position, and it's kind of insulting, you know, to be honest with you. And I can appreciate that you have to prove yourself, got it for minimum wage.
And for all that work.
Yeah, who decides for it? And yet they wouldn't hesitate to tap in on your experience and resources while they're continuing to pay you minimum wage. So that's one thing. And another thing, when you move and switch jobs, and probably it's one thing I like best about the military is this. I'm a real transitional person. I love to transition and move on, and I thrive with that. But the status quo is dull and boring, and I get tired of it, you know, so I'm still in my 3 to 5 year cycle, even though I'm not in anymore. But when you move or switch jobs in military life, people start back at the ground floor. And we can move and go anywhere in the world and switch jobs, switch entire career fields if we want in the military. We don't lose our pay, we don't lose our status. When we get reassigned, there's someone there to greet us, to say hello, they help coordinate for housing, they give us an introduction, they give us an orientation. We're welcome, and so our extended family is there. And as a retiree, when you don't have that camaraderie, and that's the camaraderie I'm talking about, not just the work environment camaraderie, belonging to that community, and the community extends literally all over the world. You could go anywhere in the world. To go as a civilian, you know, to switch jobs and career fields, you're starting over again. You're not welcome with open arms. People aren't expecting you. You're intruding in their territory. They feel threatened frequently, worrying that you're going to try and take over their job. We didn't have that kind of stuff in the military. But typically, when we moved up and got promoted, we also get reassigned, and that's one of the things you try to do for good basic leadership. You don't want to take somebody who's right from this group of peers and all of a sudden make one of them a supervisor because your position with them has changed. And you see that kind of thing, in the civilian world, this is a very tenuous position, and you see a lot of threat, a lot of backstabbing, a lot of people trying to hold someone else back and not wanting to give you a chance or taking advantage of what you want. So there's a lot of difficulty with retirees. I kind of watch the statistics, and in reality, the life expectancy or lifespan of military retirees is much lower than the regular society. And one of the reasons, well, there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, people thrive on routine regimentation. They've got their extended family, their family, they're really kind of set, and there's a lot of stress and anxiety. Plus, you don't have to physical exercise, you don't have to be up at a certain time, you've lost a certain amount of routine or regimentation, which obviously you become accustomed to after 20 to 30 years of service. Your whole system, it's a dramatic change to your system. Unless you really stay focused and go after something and stay a real contributing member of society, especially the people who put in 30 years who don't choose to go out seeking alternative employment, who want to simply retire. There's only so many hours a day you really can fish. And it takes them a while to realize that and become unhappy. Of course, then with the loss of the medical benefits, you don't get your physicals as often as you want because you're not required to anymore. Just so many changes that you can see that all is very systemic and how it feeds into the whole quality of life issue when they don't take care of their health and they get depressed and they've got their suicides. And just the overall lifespan of military retirees is considerably lower than the regular civilian population. You'd almost think it wouldn't be, but when you look at how it can happen with all the things that affect transitioning, and some people can never make the transition from being in control to supervising, to calling the shots, depending on the rank, the position, the type of organization they want. Probably the hardest folks who have... Folks who have the hardest time are those who are in the combat arms, because that is a whole other world of itself, where if you speak someone with someone jumps, and you can't do that considering well, and some cannot transition from that. They go home and start barking at their families, and before you know it, they've lost their families, and that feeds into that lifespan picture, too. So I think that kind of answers that question. Kind of went off on a little tangent, but yeah, retirement is a difficult transition. The real benefit for me, I mean, I didn't have my goals, I had my educational goals, and I had the military to pay for my educational goals. I had a lot of personal goals, so I had a lot of things to stay focused on that I wanted to do. Plus, as much as I love the Army, and truly I loved it, and the opportunities it gave me, I didn't live for the Army. Mm-hmm. It was more than a means to an end. There's no way you can say the military is just a job. It's not just a job. But it just didn't become part of me. Mm-hmm. It was still a means to an end. It was a stepping stone to other things. suffering some of the very things that conflict and Melissa fought with. My needs to travel, my needs for job security, for retirement security, medical security, for educational security, and that, you know, so, you know, I was going to be a user. I gave back 110% of what it gave me. But see, I didn't let it become part of me.
Yeah, that helped a lot.
And plus, I had my own fault. So it was a tremendous help. And if I never saw them on February, it's fine with me. If I never wear another hat, it's fine with me. But